Om Shanti. Good morning. Does anybody know what the theme of this morning is? Loving my stage. We hear this word stage a lot, don't we, in Brahmin life? Yeah? High stage, low stage, medium stage, pure stage, impure stage. How would you define the word stage? If somebody was to ask you, what is a stage, what would you say? Something that fluctuates. What is it? Yeah, we talk about fluctuating stage, and then Baba says you have to have a stable stage. But what is a stage? A status is different. Faith we have in Baba. Faith is an element that creates a stage. But what is stage? A place to perform, right? A platform on which you act or you choose to express yourself in daily life, right? And in Brahmin terms, when Baba talks about the stage, for me it's very simple. It's an aspect of what is subtle inside me. Because as human beings, our platform of expression has always been so gross and physical, right? Pushing, getting the energy, force done. And in Baba's world, when Baba talks about looking after your stage, he's talking about looking after the subtle energy that exists inside you. So when we talk about the human being and the development of the human being, we talk about the physical level, the emotional level, the mental level, and the spiritual level. Right? And the spiritual level is the subtle energy of the soul. And so, how much every day am I cultivating the energy of spirituality? And so, from that place, how much am I expressing myself? Like how much are my words filled with the energy of spirituality? My daily activity, whatever it is that I have to go about doing, to what extent is that filled with spiritual energy? Right? It's the energy that I choose to hold onto no matter what I'm doing in my life. Right? And it's subtle. And I think one of the first aspects of beginning to love your stage is you have to have a love for subtlety. A deep love for subtlety. There are two worlds we live in. One is the gross physical world with all the events and actions and circumstances happening on the top. And then there's a bigger world of the energy of vibrations and feelings and thoughts and attitudes and drishti that actually conspire to create those surface events. Right? And so, for me, knowing and getting a sense of my stage is very important. What am I holding on to when I'm holding on to my stage? I'm holding on to the energy of the soul, the energy of purity, the energy of faith, the energy of respect, the energy of knowledge. This is subtle energy. And yes, it influences our subtle organs. The mind is a subtle power. The intellect is a subtle power. And my sanskars are subtle energies. And so how I choose to pay attention to these subtle organs, can I use my mind with peace and patience? Can I slow down my intellect and use wisdom? Can I engage my divine sanskaras? This is subtlety. Yeah? So I would call the mind, intellect, sanskaras, the attitude, the drishti, like the framework of subtle expression. That's the means through which subtlety is expressed. You know, we text messages here to each other. Everybody's on WhatsApp here, I presume, right? You're writing that. But generally speaking, you communicate through WhatsApp or Viber or whatever medium. And in seconds or milliseconds, you get a reply back. Right? Now, if text messaging is so fast, imagine how fast the power of our thoughts are. Right? Physically, you're texting and you're communicating this quickly. Imagine how fast subtle vibration is. And how the power of the creation of a pure thought now, it almost instantaneously can reach where it needs to reach. It doesn't take time. And so, as a Brahmin, our world is the subtle world. We're working with the energy of the power of thought, of the power of knowledge, and then of the power of divine sanskaras. Respect, yeah? Tolerance, patience, peace. That's what I'm working with as a Brahmin. Now, admittedly, we've come in as a mixed package, right? We've adopted the lifestyle of a Brahmin. And then what makes the soul a Brahmin is the surrender to Baba. Because it's the difference between a Brahmin and an angel. An angel is consistently operating of subtle energy. It doesn't touch anything gross anymore. But we're transitioning from Brahmin into angel. Right? And then angel into deity. You can't just do Brahmin and deity without the angel in between. Because that whole step of becoming subtle is what this journey is about. So that one thought can do its work. One glance and drishti can do its work. A small shift in attitude can bring about transformation. This is where we're arriving at if you want to start working from your stage. Does that make sense? And then you have to use less words. You have to do less. You don't have to convince people. You don't have to try and prove anything. Because that's not working from your stage. So this whole dimension for me is it's about holding a subtle frequency of energy, keeping a subtlety alive. And I remember many years ago, somebody asked Daddy Janki this question. Daddy, what is your effort at this current time? And Daddy gave a very simple answer. Daddy just pays attention to keeping her feelings pure. Feelings pure. Right? It's like she knows that subtle vibrations are very pure feelings, are very clean feelings. So her attention is to create an inner atmosphere of pure feelings. That's what I'm holding on when I'm creating my stage. And she has so much self-respect that she doesn't allow anything to dirty those feelings. This is what self-respect is. You know, that I protect that subtle frequency of my inner vibrations, my inner atmosphere. And I look after it well. so that I don't allow something else to get mixed in the atmosphere inside that I've created. And it is a slow cultivation. You know, this doesn't happen overnight. It's every day the attention to keeping an eye on myself and on what is subtle whilst I'm doing what I have to do in life. Now, most of us hold jobs, go to schools, run families, businesses, and we have to deal with an incredible amount of detail. Is that right? Yeah? A lot of detail. What to do, when to do, how to do it, da da da. So much detail. And yet, within that detail, there is a subtle dimension. Many times, you know, I'll have people come to me with complicated stories or problems of this happened and that happened and this detail and that detail. And I just have to go somewhere inside me and listen to a subtle voice. And often that subtle voice is very simple. It's a subtle voice that says, it's okay. Everything's okay. And then it doesn't matter what the details are, I'll park them all outside. But I'll stay focused on the subtle voice inside. The first basis for dealing with this situation is listening to that voice that says, everything is okay. Does that make sense? You will have had this experience in situations. Because there is a subtle voice that speaks. There is the voice of the outside, people's voices, the voice of the situation, the voice of circumstances. But if you just stay quiet for a few moments, the soul will speak to you and say something. It's okay. You'll get like people call it a gut feeling. And what's very important is that is your first place to anchor yourself in. Yeah? Because if I don't listen and accept that voice that everything is okay, then when I try to handle the detail of a situation, I get lost in its, how do you say, what do newspapers do? They make a big deal out of things. There's a word for it. Sensationalize it. Right? So it's easy to get lost in sensationalism of a situation. But yet, internally, when I hear that voice, everything's okay. Even if every piece of information I'm receiving is that everything is not okay. Right? It doesn't matter. It does not matter. Because inside, I've plugged in to a subtle feeling of the situation. Well, of myself in it, not the situation. And so even if the situation is not okay, but because I have accepted that everything's okay, then I can handle each detail and help it to become okay. Right? What are problems? Problems are just confused solutions. Right? They're just lots and lots of detail in the wrong order. That's all it is. And so I found it's been very helpful for me to always tune in to this subtle voice. Otherwise, your mind and intellect get tossed about like boats in a stormy sea. And before you know it, you've become part of the problem. Yeah? Is that clear? Does that make sense? Tune in to the subtle frequency. Now, one of the things we've just had recently is a youth coordinator's retreat. And the theme has been the living yajna. And people say, well, what's that? What's the living yajna? Right? What's the yajna? And as we've been exploring with the daddies downstairs and our own churnings and sessions, one of the things that becomes very clear is that the yajna is an energy that Shiv Baba brought down when Baba came, an energy of purity, an energy of knowledge, because the yajna is always talked about the sacrificial fire of knowledge, an energy of truth. And the energy that Shiv Baba represents, right? The Murli, the knowledge, the truth, Baba himself, the essence of who Shiv Baba is. And then what I do with that energy determines how close or how much I feel I belong to the yajna. What am I doing with Shiv Baba's energy in my life? I can say a name, yes, I'm a Brahmin, I get up Amrit Vela, I listen to Murali, I follow all the principles, but what's my source of energy inside? How much is Shiv Baba's energy present in my life in a practical way? How much is this energy the source of my sustenance, my one and only companion, the sweetness of all relationships? So it's not that we are the yajna. No. There is Baba that's the yajna, and my relationship with the yajna. And what have I done inside myself to keep Shiv Baba's presence alive? You know, and for a yajna, there are aspects of sacrifice, surrender, renunciation, because you have to give something up, right, for truth to work for you. You have to give something up to protect purity. Often, we choose to protect comfort and keeping things easy. But what you end up protecting is mixture. Because you're neither here nor there. But to be able to really live with pure feelings, the soul must have tyag of what is gross. You have to be willing to challenge what is still gross inside the soul. What aspects of grossness am I still indulging in? Grossness in my thinking? Grossness in my vision? And even when you're interacting with people, what are you seeing? Are you seeing looking at behaviors? Are you looking at actions? Are you holding on to people's words? Right? Grossness. Your mind, what is your mind doing? Is it wandering back to the past? Grossness. Baba was very clear this morning when he said, don't touch the past. Right? So our faculties, our subtle faculties, the mind, the intellect, are used in a very gross way. And because they're used in a gross way, they trigger off old sanskars. They make our attitudes very fixed and unflexible. And they throw dust into our vision. And so deep care is required to look after mind and intellect. I feel that if we can take care of these two organs, subtle organs, well, my whole inner machinery works well. Because sanskars are created on the basis of the partnership of the mind and the intellect. It's what your mind and intellect do that eventually expresses and eventually then creates a sanskar. Right? Dadi Ratan Moini was sharing something quite interesting. She was saying, in the early days of the yajna, Brahma Baba used to tell them to forget the word mind. There's no such thing as the word mind. Just forget it. Right? Mind is, in its truest sense, the power of thought, the power of pure thought. It's the creation of a thought. It's like the purity and the pure energy of the soul shaping itself into a thought. That's the power of the mind. It's the power of thought. The mind that we all live with, yeah, that you feel has its own personality, is a product of your past. And it was very interesting because she was saying that, you know, it's the mind that experiences the pull of karmic bondages. It's the mind that experiences attractions and desires. Right? If I know I'm a soul, I accept I'm a soul, why is it so difficult to be myself? How can it be difficult to be who you really are? If you're feeling a sense of difficulty in being who you are, then one of the indicators of that is that the mind is still experiencing a bondage of karma, an influence. Yeah? A bondage of karma leaves its residue. It's like it leaves behind a feeling, a pocket of emotion, a desire, a sanskar. So your mind is always influenced by this vibrational residue. Yeah? Or it could be thought patterns, self-limiting, negative, doubtful thought patterns that you've indulged in over a period of time. Yeah? The mind is subservient to a particular bondage. And that's why you feel you can't be yourself. Does that make sense? Yeah? And so the mind that we're actually living with today isn't pure. It needs to be purified. But the mind that you're experiencing and that you listen to a lot, you know, when people say, oh, I can't do that because I feel this, I feel that. It's like wherever the mind goes, they go. And the poor intellect's gone to sleep. Even though Baba's given the Srimad, Baba's given the knowledge, Baba's given the understanding. No, I feel this, so I have to do this. Right? That's a mind under bondage. Now, when Baba talks about manmanabhav, tasting the sweetness of Baba's mind, make your mind belong to me. One of the questions the youth asked, or it was, I think it was in a chit chat in the evening, and Daddy was saying, one of them had shared their feedback that, I can manage my time better when I reduce waste. Right? Because when you waste your time, your energy. And so somebody was, and so she's saying, how do you conquer waste? Do you have a method for conquering waste? And she was challenging the group. What's your method for conquering waste? And you know, some says, well, I have the awareness of I am a soul. And she said, well, when the waste comes, does that awareness stay that you're a soul? Does that work for you? And then they said, well, not really. Right? Then somebody else said, well, I have a realization that, you know, I must stop this. She says, yeah, but sometimes waste thoughts come with so much force. Can you really stop it at that time? And then he goes, well, not really. And so, you know, we turned the tables on Daddy. And she shared something very beautiful. She said, at that time, engage your mind in Baba's praise. Right? You might, if you can stop it and you're successful at stopping it before it starts running, great. But if you can't, then what you need to do is engage it in a conversation about Baba's speciality and Baba's praise. It's like Look, Baba has come. Baba has come all the way down from up above to teach us. Baba says, child, I am responsible for you. I will take your burden. And sing Baba's praise in your heart and in your mind at that time. Consciously divert your mind in that direction. Because when you do that, what happens is that just by remembering Baba's praise and why Baba's presence is so important right now, Baba's energy comes to life. And you'll start to experience an inner intoxication. Even though there's a problem, it'll wake up your intoxication inside. And eventually, that intoxication will help you sustain your self-respect in that situation. Because the whole thing about circumstances is an energy game. Right? Matai, ye session chal raha hai videshiyon ke liye. Koi piche se thoda darwaza band kar denge? Toh dekhi. Just close the doors gently. Okay. So what was I saying? Yeah. Baba's praise. Because you can't control yourself at that moment. But what you can do is engage yourself in conversation with God. Not about the problem. Not about the situation, not about the other person, and not about your past, but about Him. Talk to Baba about Baba. And that's a very different energy. Because bhakti energy is talking to Baba about the problem, the past, someone else's sanskars and nature. Right? But talk to Baba about Baba. You know, I remember in one Avyakt Murali, Baba had said that whenever anger comes, just say, sweet Baba. Really? And I remember thinking, can't be that easy. Just say, sweet Baba? And is that easy? And I'll tell you a practical story. It actually happened to me. I used to live in Oxford at the retreat center. And, you know, we have a big team there of about 30 individuals looking after the place. And one day, and of course, you know, you're living, working together, things happen. It's normal. And one day, you know, somebody had done something that was going to, you know, create work for 5 more people. And this person came into the office where I was sitting, and it was my job to kind of work this mess out. And inside me, I'd had a little bit of a reaction, just a little bit. You know, in what form? You should know better. Why did you let this happen? Right? You know, you're experienced, and surely you should know better. Anyway, I had a little reaction, and I just then stopped myself. And that person came in front of me. So my job was to find out what happened. So I started talking to them and saying, so can you tell me how this came about and what happened, right? So here I am thinking I'm being very calm. But what they're picking up is the energy of my subtle reaction. Right? And so I shouldn't have been surprised, but they started to react back to me. They started to get angry, justify their position. And I thought, okay, this conversation is going nowhere. So I decided to leave the office. And I thought, I don't want to engage in this energy for my own protection, my own subtlety. So I said, let's talk later. And then look how Maya and the ego work, right? All these vices, how they quietly enter into your ear, whisper a few thoughts. So I was walking down the corridor, and I had the thought, but why is he justifying this? He was wrong. And he needs to understand that he's wrong. And he needs to know what the right thing is. This was the thought that was happening, right? So then I come down the corridor and I see a telephone. So guess what I do? I pick up the telephone, take two, to try and speak to him. So I pick up the telephone and call him, and I try again. And of course, it's all coming from the wrong place, and so no surprise, he explodes on the end of the telephone. He just gets very, very angry, right? And so I'm sitting there, and this little ego has found its way in my brain and telling me, no, but you're right, and you've got to work it out, and you've got to fix this. All these are manifestations of ego. You've got to sort it out. So persevere. And I did. And what I got back was a big reaction. And it was very interesting because I was watching how him getting angry was making me get angry. Because suddenly the ego flared up even more and went, how dare he speak to me like this? He's the one who's wrong and he's the one having a go at me, right? But I didn't see all the build-up of my own thoughts prior to that situation. So then then he hung up on me. He just put the phone down on me. And at that moment, I think the ego had had enough and said, nobody puts the phone down on me. And so by that time, you know, I had been affected by the anger. And the only thing I could think of was to go to the kitchen and drink a glass of water. So I went to the kitchen, picked up a glass of water, and I started drinking it. And somebody came into the kitchen, and they looked at me and they said, Sister Gopi, are you okay? And I just looked at them, and then they said to me, I think you need the meditation room. And at that point I thought, yeah, why didn't I think of Papa's room? Right? Drama helps. If you really want to get over something, even if at that moment you don't think of Baba, Baba will send someone. So I went walking off to Baba's room. I sat down in front of Baba's trance light, and World War III began here. Right? Do you know what World War III looks like? A repetition of that scene again and again and again, right? And your dialogue with that scene again and again. He shouldn't have said that, but why did he do that? And why did he speak like that? And then I remembered what Baba had said in the Avit Muli. Sweet Baba, sweet Baba, sweet Baba. But no, why did he speak like that? And why did he get angry? And doesn't he realize the implications of what he's done? Sweet Baba, sweet Baba, sweet Baba. Right? So this went on. Because at that moment, when I looked at Baba, I said, Baba, help. And I remembered these two words, sweet Baba. And so for a good 10 minutes, this dialogue went on, right? And as I started saying, sweet Baba, I could feel Baba's drishti pulling me. I could just feel the reality of what Baba was pulling me. And after about 10 minutes, Baba's drishti melted me enough for me to ask the question, what's really important in this relationship? Is it important that I'm right and he's wrong? And that, you know, I have to fix the situation? Or is it important that Baba's energy and the energy of love and respect is kept alive here? And the moment I asked that question, it was like finished. Every bit of ego and anger dissolved in a split second. It just evaporated. And I was just filled with Baba's love and drishti. And I was getting so intoxicated because the more I said sweet Baba, the more I felt Baba coming to life. You know, and then I spent 20 minutes enjoying the intoxication of a victory and of Baba's presence. And then guess what happened? After 20 minutes, I walked out of the room. And guess who was standing there? That person. And that person had come to apologize to me. They came to say, look, I'm really sorry that happened. Let's just forget it. They don't really apologize generally. And I said, you know what? No problem. With a really open heart, no problem, it's forgotten. Otherwise, sometimes you say no problem, but it's still a problem. Right? But no problem. It's still a problem. Right? But really, that victory meant that it's just, okay, forget it. No problem. It was like a little pinprick. And I realized that the work I'd done to keep Baba alive mentally that brought me back to a place of self-respect. It was like organizing something in the atmosphere, because I was coming back to an original position inside me. And as I was coming back to my originality inside me, it was ordering, and that vibration was reaching out. And it must have been a mirror for that soul, wherever he was sitting, where he himself must have had a realization, maybe what I've done wasn't true to what I believe. And his integrity is such that he had the humility to come and apologize. I asked myself, could I have lived without an apology? Yes. Even if he didn't apologize to me, it wouldn't have mattered, because I was victorious. Does that make sense? This is the power of Manmanabhava. It is that simple to sing and to invoke Baba's praise enough until it gets you to a point where the energy in your mind has shifted. Shifted away from the repetition of the problem, away from the repetition of the situation, the circumstance. And you're generating a sense of personal intoxication. This is so important in a process of cultivating love for the self. Because this is honesty. Real honesty. You know, I was thinking, how can you love your stage? You can't force yourself to love your stage, create love for yourself. But love is something that is naturally drawn out because of honesty. When someone's honest, you know, you just feel affection, you feel softness. And in the same way, when I use my mind honestly and I use my intellect truthfully, the soul cannot help but generate love for itself. Does that make sense? It's when you've gone against your conscience, you've misused or let your mind wander back to the past, that even if you try, the soul cannot give itself love. And so cultivating love for your stage is to use your mind and intellect honestly and truthfully. And then when you say Baba, that love will take over. It's very, very easy. But the work, in that story, I could have easily sat in the kitchen. What does normally happen? People sit down, they drink a glass of water, and then what do they start to do? They start talking about that person to someone else, right? You start expanding on that situation because you're trying to find some relief. But the more you talk about it, the more you're creating your own web that you're going to stay trapped in. And you're committing a sin. Because you talk badly about someone and you've influenced somebody else's drishti towards that person, it's a sin. Right? So this whole dimension of Manmanabhava in a very, very practical way, you know, it does require you to sit with yourself and Baba and do what it takes to shift energy. Don't get up halfway. Otherwise you're creating sanskars like that. You're creating half sanskars. Sanskars of mixture that don't help your effort-making life. They don't. Because on what basis do you make effort in Brahmin life? Your sanskars. So whatever effort you're making, if you don't complete an effort, you haven't created an accurate sanskar. Right? So, for me, this aspect of keeping an eye on your mind in this way and holding a frequency of pure, subtle energy. That's the most important thing for me. And it's something that I've had to learn quite intensively, especially in the last 3 years. Because the responsibility of Baba's task, many things, the family's growing, there are many things that you can have an excuse to think about. Right? But the more you think, the more in bondage you become. Right? The more responsible you feel, and then because you feel responsible, you have to think about it, the less carefree. You don't experience being a carefree emperor. And so for me, I began to look, you know, hold the energy of the mind and say, okay, whatever Baba has given me, wherever he's put me, what am I bringing into this? Whatever the detail is, leave that. That's there anyway. But what's the energy that I'm bringing to this? What's the energy that I want to sustain in this, no matter what happens? That's my focus. Because when we come to Baba, we come with our skills, talents, whatever, and we do service on the basis of that. So our intellect works on the basis of that, right? We're efficient at doing things. We can get jobs done because our intellects have been trained in that way. But then anybody can do that job. Anybody can do that and use their skills. It doesn't make you any different from a Lokic person. But there comes a point when, in order to become an instrument, you have to suspend your intellect. Because you're working with energy. When you're being an instrument, what are you being an instrument for? A master purifier, a master ocean of knowledge, right? And so the game changes when you're an instrument. As an instrument, you're never holding on to detail, you're always holding on to essence. What's the essence, and what's the essence and the energy that needs to be kept alive here? What's the gyan that needs to be kept alive here? You know, many times we go into situations or I have to listen to stories or, you know, people, project management, there's many details. And especially when people are not getting on with each other. And then there's multiple personality conflicts. Right? So what are you going to do? And everybody will have their own story. Right? Everybody has their own perception and their own story about that situation. Now what are you going to do? You're going to listen to every single story and work it out that way and try and make everyone happy? Doesn't work that way. But when I listen to that, what I'm listening for is not the detail of a story. I'm listening to what is the gyan that is missing here. There's some aspect of gyan that's not being used here or accepted. And that's why souls are experiencing conflict. What is that aspect of gyan? And so my focus is, rather than trying to convince this person how good the other person is, because you can't, and that's not what this is about, is about finding what's the gyan here that needs to be activated. And then engaging on the basis of gyan. You know, many times people will come to me with stories about this one said this, and that one said this, and that one did this, and that one did. And then I'll just put the brake on a minute in because I don't want to be a dustbin. I definitely don't want to be a dustbin. My purity is very valuable. The energy of my purity is very valuable. So within 20 seconds, I'll get a sense. Are they speaking from a genuine place or are they just offloading rubbish? Are they speaking from a place of realization or are they just dumping? And my self-respect tells me, do not accept dump. Close the lid. And so I'll just turn the question around back to them and say, okay, in this process, at what point did you give up on your spirituality? at what do you know the point when you started being affected by this? What did you let go of inside yourself that this started to affect you? And the moment I turn it around on them, it's like they stop in their tracks. Like I've asked them a question that they've never thought about. Because they've let something go, they've let a dharana go inside themselves that's allowed a situation to affect them. And the situation has affected them so much that it's become a story. It's become a personal story. So there's a story happening outside, and then they've developed, their imagination has developed a story about that story. And they cannot rest until they've told everybody around them that story. Have you ever been in situations like that? Yeah. You don't have to accept that. Yeah. Protecting yourself from rubbish is your number one priority. Your ego may feed you and say, well, you're helping them. You have to help them. But what do you have to help them with? With gyan and a yogyukt stage. Not with more details of a story. Because if they continue to dump, they're strengthening that sanskara in them. And if you continue to accept what they dump, what are you doing to yourself? Becoming a rubbish dump. Right? I remember, you know, for me, it struck me as very clear when Daddy Janki had visited London January before. And I remember when she walked in to Global House, and then she came into the seminar room, and everybody's sitting in the seminar room. And the first thing she said to everybody in that room, she says, I don't want to hear about anyone's weaknesses because all of you are good. In 1 second, she put a line and she said, nobody is going to come to me to talk to me about anybody else. Right? She's basically telling you her boundary. Everyone is good, so I don't want to hear any more talk about anyone's weaknesses. Full stop. So then everybody in that room has to face themselves, right? Why am I so affected by this one's weakness? Why do I feel the need to tell Daddy about that person's weakness? You have to start facing yourself. So when you protect your purity, you become a powerful mirror for people around you. Because they have to pick up the responsibility to face themselves. You might be liked, you might be disliked. But you know how there's this phrase of, I wouldn't say you have to be cruel to be kind, but long term, because you're working with truth and purity, Baba's energy will reach that soul. Because this is the method with which we clear these channels of mixed energy and old patterns in our relationships that we feed. The familiarities, the expectations, and the games that happen in relationships. Right? Is all of this making sense so far? I'm not just talking up in the air, am I? No. Are you starting to get a picture of what it means to look after your stage? Right? Let me tell you one last little story. And this was something in relation to Dadiji. In Shantivan, you know, often Dadiji would go for a walk after breakfast or mid-morning at some point. And, you know, in the evenings too. And I remember one time taking her for a walk. And we came back from the walk and went into her sitting room in her cottage. And a sister came in who was quite upset. And the sister, because she was upset, was speaking very, very loudly and very strongly and, you know, saying things that were a bit strong from as I was looking at them. And I watched Daddy, and Daddy wasn't saying anything to her. Daddy just listened to her. And yet there were things that she was saying that, from my perspective, could have been stopped or at least corrected, you know. So she continued for about 4 or 5 minutes speaking, quite loudly, quite forcefully. And then, towards the end of her speech, when she finished, it wasn't really a speech, it was a rant, Daddy looked at her and said, is that all? And I looked at Daddy. You know, I'm the observer and I'm getting upset, right? And then he goes, is that all? Is that all you have to say? And she said, yes. And then Daddy picked up an apple and gave it to her. And she looked at Daddy. And then she just turned around and left the cottage. And I'm looking at this scene, kind of going, hang on a second, what just happened here? You know, Daddy's a senior, and Daddy-ji should at least try and correct or help the soul understand what she's doing and saying. Daddy didn't do anything. Nothing. She just gave her an apple, and off she went. So I'm saying to Daddy, what happened? You know, but Daddy, couldn't you say something to her? And Daddy goes, Daddy wasn't listening to what she was saying. I thought, okay. Daddy wasn't listening to what she was saying. Daddy was watching her mind to make sure that it was remaining stable so that Baba's energy could reach that soul. This is an effort of someone who loves their stage. No matter what the situation and the drama, what are you always keeping an eye on? On that frequency of energy. A mind that remains stable, that remains peaceful, that remains close to God. Whatever they want to say, they'll say. They said it 5,000 years ago. You can't change that. Right? But in it, you don't need to lose your state of mind. And then magic happens. Miracles happen. You don't need to get caught up in games of convincing or proving anything to anyone. I remember this very, very powerfully in a public talk I had to give in London, central London somewhere. And towards the end of my talk, there was a gentleman sitting in the front row who was a little bit mentally challenged. And so he proceeded, I asked for questions and feedback, and he proceeded to say, I want to correct some of the things that you've said in your talk. So he proceeded to give me a list of all the words that I used in the talk that he thought were not right and why they were not right. Okay? So I remembered Daddy at that point and you know, that story. So I just looked at him and I just watched my mind. 30 seconds passed, my mind was stable. 40 seconds passed, my mind was stable. A minute passed, my mind was... And then he continued. And then I could feel something start to happen. Right? You know, the energy is starting to reach you. And in that moment, I went, Baba, come. I just went, Baba, I don't want to lose my frame of mind here. Come. And the moment I invoked Baba, he stopped talking. And when he stopped talking, he then looked at me and says, so, what do you have to say? And I just looked at him and said, thank you. That was it. End of story. Finished. And I felt so clean inside. None of his words had gone in. I didn't have to use my intellect on anything. And it was just a thank you. And then what interestingly enough happened, the whole audience took it up and started to have a go at him. I didn't say anything, and I'm watching this dialogue happening between him and the rest of the audience, and I'm an observer, right, in this process. So magic happens when this kind of attention is kept. And when Dadi Janki says she keeps 99% attention inside and only 1% outside, this is what she's saying. She's always keeping an eye on her inner world whilst she's in a situation. That Baba's energy, her yoga, her accumulated power isn't fluctuating. Now, that's what we have to take care of at all costs. That's what it means to protect your purity and to keep your stage alive and to remain honest and true with yourself. Because the moment you lose your eye on yourself and you get engaged in the situation, the father disappears. Because in Hindi, you know, they say, Jahan baat hai, baap nahi hai. Where there are situations, you know, the expansion of a situation, the father cannot be present. But where the father's presence is, the situation merges. So experiment with this. Because it's a very, very fundamental part of nurturing and taking care of your stage. And then you can remain light. You can see the lightness in a detailed situation. You know, all the drama, the sensationalism. You really see something as a drama. All the exaggeration. You don't get caught up in it. And you can laugh. Because to look after your stage requires lightness. It requires patience. Lightness. And also, you know, the entry point into your stage is memories of happiness. Memories of good times with Baba. When Baba says, remember your attainments, this is the only time in the whole cycle that you can create memories with Baba. You can create a living relationship with Baba. And throughout the rest of the cycle, Baba's just a memory. But now he's here and I get to actively create a memory with him. So let me focus my Brahmin life less on the people around me and on the situation around me and more on how can I maximize creating the best memories with Baba in Sangam Yug. So that I can ensure that my whole cycle will be filled with God's remembrance. Okay. Om Shanti.
Shiv Pita ko ab yaad karo, Mukti Dham tumhe jana. अपने सुकर्मों के बल पर ही सतयुग में तुमको आना है शिव पिता को अब याद करो मुक्ति धाम तुम्हें जाना है सतयुग में अब तुम्हें आना है,
सीधा मैं तुम्हें
सतयुग में।